Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Hello from the Gompa. Wonderful to see you all. And in case I skip this, I want to wish you all a happy Hanukkah and a Merry Christmas, and also a very safe and healthy winter time. I hope none of you get seriously sick, and all of you have a lovely, lovely holiday, even though it's going to be Zoom and not visiting so much or at all. But I hope today's class and I hope today's teaching will give some solace and also some opportunities and teachings on how to counter, if you wish, the darkness that descends on so many people during this time. So, Umzi in Switzerland. Michael, if you could lead us in the preliminaries, that'd be great. Thank you.
The four thoughts to turn the mind from samsara. Gopang drup te jen dun ja da ter in jen ri yang chi da pu kim dra dang we nam jing ge par mi da ha ki da chen mi ta tu di ta kor we ni di gar ke kyang de we go ka ma chi pe Si pe de lam mita war, nyang geng de pe lam du ju. Del jor lu di ran den chir, nyen mong duk sum mi ge fang. Nge we le la be pa kye, go sum dam zi ko ba sum.
As this excellent body of mind with leisure and endowments will be difficult to obtain repeatedly in the future, right now I will accomplish the state of unsurpassed Samantabhadra to meaningfully benefit others. Also, it is not certain when the hateful enemy of this present precious body, the Mara of Death, will arrive. I and other beings are impermanent, the time of death being uncertain. Since there is no opportunity for happiness wherever one is born in samsara, and since a happy existence was never seen, I will enter the path of nirvana. In order for this body, relation, and wealth to possess meaning, I will abandon the three non-virtuous poisonous afflictions, develop diligence in virtuous actions, and protect the vows and commitments of the three doors. Going for refuge.
Dudi ne zong la me jang jo bar, jinda kin jong la ma la kyaap chi, gandrup chok se le yidam la kyaap chi, bar je kin se gandro la kyaap chi, kang ni to wo sangye la kyaap chi, jiwa chak tre dam je la kyaap chi, Toki shing jo gen dun da kya hap chi. Trin den gang da kyo kyung la kya hap chi.
Namo, from now until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening, I and all other sentient beings equal to space go for refuge to the Guru, source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Yidam, bestower of supreme city. We go for refuge to the Dakini, dispeller of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the Sangha, the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas, masters of activity. Namo, from now until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening,
I and all other sentient beings equal to space go for refuge to the Guru, source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Yidam Bisora Supreme City. We go for refuge to the Dakini, dispeller of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the Sangha, the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas, masters of activity. Generating bodhicitta. Nyaya korve semjen dungelang drehelging deva choglang imparne laga kundla tang yam yam pe sem chok di jang chok nimpo dov chie dagi ki dagi drodruk semjen gundhen chir Sangye gopang tedir to parja, deji ahsel doje ning poilam, lame chedir rapetun paragi. May all sentient beings of samsara be free from suffering, be joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. We generate the supreme mind impartial toward us all in order to attain the heart of awakening. In order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms, we must attain the stage of Buddhahood in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in his unsurpassed teaching, the path of the luminously clear Vajra essence. May all sentient beings of samsara be free from suffering, be joyful and truly abide in supreme happiness. We generate the supreme mind impartial toward us all in order to attain the heart of awakening. In order that we may fully benefit the beings of the six realms, we must attain the stage of Buddhahood in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in his unsurpassed teaching, the path of the luminously clear Vajra essence.
Well, to start, so far today, I see a note here. The collective white Tara mantras are at 808,000. And adding the ones that I've done in and probably some other people, we're probably close to a million, probably be close to a million at the end of today. And I've had a number of requests for people who would like to continue with Tara or continue with Chinrezig, different Yidams that they're practicing. That's great. Wonderful. And because of that, and because of those requests, which of course I would say yes, any practice that you like and it's working for you and you're getting results and you're getting signs, excellent, carry on. For that reason, I've picked for next month for 2 days. I'll announce that at the end, but the Jamon Controls text, a pithy text, of an introduction to generation completion stage practices. So I'll explain more. So that's coming up in January for two weekends. I'd also like to mention, it's very important for a teacher, especially of Vajrayana, to always state where they receive the sources of transmissions. That's very, very important. It's considered to be essential for faith and confidence. And I'd like to say I have wonderful memories of one of the first empowerments, not the first empowerment, but one of the first empowerments received in this life from His Eminence Khyal Rinpoche, which was White Tara. And I remember the house, I remember sitting there, and I remember very vividly receiving the empowerment. It was wondrous. And I'm practicing every day. The next one was by the 16th Karmapa, the Dharma Center of Canada, in the temple. Then many, many, many times by Namgyal Rinpoche. One time by the 14th Dalai Lama in Spiti, Ladakh, which was an unusual form of Tara. Three-colored Tara, green Tara, white Tara, and blue Tara. So that was composed by the treasure by, I believe, the 7th Dalai Lama, he said. And then another time as a blessing by Wangdor Rinpoche. I believe it was with a green bicycle bottle, drinking bottle from his shrine. So that was a spontaneous a green Tara empowerment. Well, it was lovely. So today the two themes, if you wish, centered around Tara, is the four Maras or the five Maras sometimes, but mostly explained as the four Maras, and then working through the eight great fears. And I'm going to explain it in three ways to understand the path of liberation is antidote, transformation, and self-liberation. So this is how we're going to approach it today. And also some answering some questions, which will come up. A wonderful opportunity, and also the text, Jaman Contrôle's text of Generation Completion, is such a beautiful text. It also gives the opportunity for those who are new to practicing what's called deity yoga. It also gives an opportunity to teach all facets of Dharma. And I wanted to reiterate, I think I've said this before, but it is confused, not for me, but gets confused. I get to hear this. Is from the point of view of Vajrayana, especially a point made by Jitsum Sungam in the Ganchig, all of Vajrayana practice and all of Vajrayana teaching must contain all the other stages and wheels of teaching exactly at the same time. So when some say, oh, Lama Mark only teaches Dzogchen or he teaches deity yoga all the time, maybe not completely true at all. But if you teach deity yoga, you must also be imbuing it and teaching Hinayana, Mahayana, and Vajrayana, and every single stage in there. Or according to tradition, and there's a real validity in this, especially as pointed out by Jitsum Sungon, if it's not taught and not practiced, all those stages, the three trainings, the precepts, virtue, ethics, all that, then it's not Vajrayana. Very important. So Namgyal Rinpoche was incredibly brilliant at this, which is all through a year. If you spent a year with Namgyal Rinpoche or had the good fortune to be around for a whole year of teaching cycle, Namgyal Rinpoche would teach Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana, mix all three together, blend all three, separate all three, and all through the year, he would be teaching cycles of this. It's fantastic. So to the four Maras. So yesterday in the explanation recitation of the 21 praises of Tara, in 1.9, we see that there is homage to Tura, the fearsome lady, destroyer of the most profound demons, destroyer of the most powerful demons, with your lotus face and stern frown. So lotus face is peaceful, and stern frown is wrathful or powerful. At the same time, you are the slayer of each and every foe. So this is important not to just squash or cover over or tranquilize the foes, but to absolutely evaporate, vanquish, and remove the foes through both peaceful and wrathful means. When it says powerful demons, the tradition of Dharma is very clear on this, is the powerful demons are the demons of Mara. And it's interesting that Mara usually refers to the kalesas or the afflictive emotions. But in the tradition of Buddhism, Mara, which is male figure, is a deity which rules over all of the desire realm, all over the Kamaloka, from the human realm right through to the godlike realms, but the except for the Arupajanas, but minor point. But Tara as a tempter, Tara as a Mara. The word means the killer. That's actually what it means, the killer, the destroyer. So Mara is really important because it's a deity, it's a being, and it's a psychological figure. It has all three qualities in the Buddhist teaching. So it's really essential. It comes up a lot. And Mara, which I'll get to later, Mara, which is really centered around doubt. Mara is the demon of doubt. Mara will place doubt into your mind stream, which will destroy your spiritual life, will break up good opportunities, and so on. So it's good to know what Mara means. This Mara is called the killer. It's called Mara, the evil one, which is Papima Maro. Puppy is really bad, real negative stuff. And then also Namutsi, which is the non-liberator, the one who is the opponent to one's liberation. And I think we can all reflect at times in retreat and out of retreat when Namutsi got in there and presented every obstacle of why we shouldn't practice, why we shouldn't go on in Dharma, why we should do something else. This is actually to do with doubt about the nature of emptiness and compassion, the natural state. So when one doesn't know and is not familiar or doesn't recollect the natural state, the natural liberative state of mind, the demon of doubt comes in and it destroys a retreat. Man, it can come in so quickly. It can have you running from retreat. It can have you sowing the seeds of the end of retreat. So one sometimes needs a lot of peacefulness to bring in peacefulness. And sometimes one needs a stern brow to face Mara. As many of you know, Mara came to the Buddha before his enlightenment. And first of all, Mara tried aggressive means. He tried to scare the Buddha. He tried to have a host of armies attacking the Buddha. He used angry, fierce means to take the Buddha's direction away from liberation, his intent. And then when that didn't work, Mara tried his three daughters and tried to tempt and allure the Buddha using desire, sexual desire, lust, to take the Buddha away from his goal of awakening. But it turns out, if you look at the suttas, you'll see that Mara chased, there's a beautiful little short sutta in the Mara suttas contained in there, where Mara chased the Buddha for 6 years before his liberation. And he chased the Buddha for 1 year after his liberation. And it is said that in many occasions, beings that become liberated are actually attacked by Mara for at least a year later. The afflictions come up and Mara tries to get at the awakened beings for at least a year later with obstacles and afflictions and difficulties and so on. So don't ignore Mara, and you should know the signs of Mara. Where is Mara located? So the Buddha explained in many occasions different aspects of what Mara really is. And the first one, the first list that we see commonly is a list of four or list of five maras. And the list of four is very common in Mahayana. And it's very commonly taught by Namjoon Rinpoche over and over and over again. But the first one in the list of four is clinging to afflictive emotions. You won't see this list in the suttas as taught in a sutta. It's put together in the commentaries as he taught this time, he taught here over here, and he taught over here. But the clinging to the afflictive emotions is clinging to the emotions as real things. And this is the belief that if we can analyze our emotions and if we can deal with our emotions and if we can somehow use antidotes and we see our emotions as real things, somehow that will take care of them. And the Buddha said, this is false. This won't work. Other great masters of Mahamudra, Dzogchen, have said a similar thing, which is, you can analyze your emotions. You may feel better, but you can't liberate the kalesas. You can't liberate, actually become free of the solidity and the terror and the grasp of emotional afflictions through the analysis of emotions. You have to go beyond concept. Another way of putting this, which is the clinging to afflictive emotions, is entertaining emotions or upholding emotions or feeding emotions, giving nutriment to emotions, giving fertilizer to emotions. Now, you may say this is very anti-emotional. It sounds very Buddhist. Well, the reason being is that if you support and you nourish emotions, then it's supporting the karmic patterns underlying it, which are usually visible, and therefore they continue, and therefore they get fed, and it actually doesn't liberate. It actually can encourage a habit pattern, an addiction. So I'll be brief on that, but I've taught a lot on that, and other teachers have. But it may seem like the way to go, but in fact, one's building up more karmic patterning. Number two, belief in the five aggregates is real. Now, I know I've certainly given a lot of teaching on this, probably every class, or just about every class, and other teachers do too. This is the belief that the five aggregates of form, of feeling, of perception, of volitional states, of karmic states, and of consciousness, that is dualistic consciousness, is real. It's something to be grasped. It's something to work with, and so on. As soon as there is grasping, I sent out a sutta, the Upadana Sutta, posted that. You have an Upadana. As soon as there is clinging in any way to what apparently is very solid, our bodies, our sensations, our mental sensations, our physical sensations, any of our perceptions as real, fabrications, which are our desire, passion, formations, all the mental states, volitional states, and also dualistic consciousness. Whenever we cling to that, we will have suffering and we will have we'll have samsara. So you'll see in the Upadana Sutta, the clinging sutta, it says here, as you say, Lord, the monks responded, the Blessed One said, and what, monks, are clingable phenomena? What is clinging? Form is a clingable phenomena. Feeling is a clingable phenomena. So we go through that list and you'll see that it's not because form has an intrinsic nature to be clung to. The habit patterns are centered around these five. And it turns out that these five, when you look very, very closely, which is vipassana, to look very, very closely at this phenomena, you will see that it has no intrinsic nature. You will not be able to find it. However, it feels very real at the time. So that is why we have to get up we have to increase our tranquility and our insightfulness. The next one is number three, which is not understanding death, which is also Mara, is death. Not to recognize that death is inevitable, not to recognize that death can come very soon, not to recognize that death is happening every second, every millisecond, every hour, not just to us, but to all sentient beings. All life forms are dying, not just at the end of their formations, but their formations are breaking up constantly. That's really all there is. It's breakup of formations, the coming together formations. So not to recognize this and not to understand it is profound suffering. And number four is a fascination with meditative experiences, meditative states. And this can be gross. And gross, I don't mean by gross out, but I mean gross as very strong, and anybody would go, you're clinging to bliss, or you know you're clinging to bliss, or you're clinging to the Bindu, you're clinging to the Tigli, you're clinging to some form or some meditative experience that's pretty cool and it's interesting. Yeah, and boy, can they be interesting. That's what I mean by gross. But subtle is very difficult to see. Subtle is when you can't see the clinging. You can't see that you're so deeply attached to meditative experience that even when you're practicing so-called Mahamudra Dzogchen, you're still looking for a state. And because you're looking for a state, you're subtly, but importantly, clinging to meditative experience, but you don't know it. That is why having a teacher, a real living teacher that you can talk to and mirror back that, is absolutely essential, because it is the number one obstacle. It's a really big obstacle. I wouldn't say it's number one, but I'd say it's very big. So fascination with meditation states, and a fascination with rupa jhanas, arupa jhanas, no matter how refined they are, they still have the clinging to appearance and bliss and cognition as real phenomena, as a real thing. And this will destroy the path of liberation. However, there's also times when we need to have some kind of attachment to developing excellent tranquil states and some kind of attachment to unfold good states. The trap is that we keep trying to bolster those states and keep working with those states as if they're the thing that is liberation, and they take us down. And eventually the demon of doubt comes in. So we call those godlike states. And of course, we don't need to even meditate today to have godlike states. We're all the beings there out in participating in Zoom with us, and all of us in this in the Gompa here are living in godlike states right now. It's an extraordinary time, and therefore, it's very easy to cling to the godlike states. Because we're in it, we're familiar with it. This is our life, and it's very, very easy. So we look for that in meditation too. Then you may say, well, how do we come out of that? What's the antidote? What's the way out of that? And the way out of that is really three. I'm going to come to that. Is three things. If we're practicing as in the tradition of Buddha Dharma, there's really three ways. There is the way of sila, samadhi, and panya or prajna in Sanskrit. Virtue, ethics, mental concentration, as I said before, and wisdom, insight. Next is to transform your being into the way phenomena really is. And that's called deity yoga, generation completion stage yoga. And please remember, because I get to hear this another way, but it's not true. All kinds of people through Southeast Asia in Theravadan tradition also practice deity yoga and are tantric practitioners. So remember that maybe not so common among the monastics, but even some monastics, and especially among the Siddha types in the Theravadan traditions in the different countries that practice Theravada, also practice generation completion stage practices. And then the third means is what is called Treccho or Mahamudra without support, is mind's essence, is the self-liberation, because it never was there in the first place, is recognizing its empty nature, which is also the radiation of compassion. So these three are the way out of the four Mars. The most direct way out is being introduced to one's mind's nature and having the confidence that one's mind's nature is free, unobstructed, luminous compassion, emptiness, luminous compassion. If one can recollect that, even after 30 seconds, a minute, 5 seconds, an hour, if one can recollect that and have absolute confidence in Buddha nature, in freedom, natural freedom, the abiding nature phenomena of all experience, one will chase Mara away. One will vanquish Mara. And really the only other difference with the list of five Maras is Mara as a deity, as a being, if you wish. So back to terror, back to liberation, back to Tara, although we didn't leave Tara, how to liberate fear and anxiety. It depends. I'm going to say this really strongly, not as a negative, but as a positive to spur one on. The ability to shake off Mara in all of its aspects depends on the degree of merit and wisdom. This is absolutely clear in the teaching. The degree to which you build merit, the degree to which you gain insight into cause and effect and into excellent relative insight of anicca, dukkha, anatta, and excellent understanding of pervasive freedom of Buddha wisdom. To the degree that you have uncovered that and built that in your being, is a degree to which you can shake off Mara. And that is why the Bodhisattva, before becoming Buddha Shakyamuni, was so strong and had such determination for 6 years to become fully awakened. He just kept shaking off Mara. In our case, we're constantly afflicted by Mara, and it is difficult to shake off. That is also why we go to Dharma teachings. That is also why we spend time with our teachers. That is why we spend time with a Sangha. That is why we spend time reading Dharma books. We're shaking off the afflictions, the demons of doubt. And the demons of doubt of Mara are stories. And just like in the texts of the suttas and the sutras, Mara tells awakened one stories, tells bodhisattva stories. You don't need to teach Dharma. You can just fully liberate. You don't need to become awakened. You're already happy. So the stories of Mara that Mara tells we should also look in our mind stream and go, what story you think I'm telling the story? But in Buddhist tradition, Mara is a deity, Mara is a person, and of course, Mara is the afflictive habit patterns of stories. Where are the stories coming from? Endless. Societal stories, familial stories, brother and sister stories, mom and dad stories, internet stories, conspiracy theory stories, Buddhist stories, all kinds of stories. And stories in one's Buddhist community, how one should be, what should one do, all kinds of stories. What's the terror? The terror is the fabrications, is building up fabrications that paralyze. So how to use antidotes and stories in a positive way is, the major teaching, both often in Dharma, not so much today, but has been, is antidotes. What we should know, antidotes, how to come out of afflictive states and how to come out of the grip of Mara. We use antidotes. We get a better story. We have a better storyline. We talk to our friends, we get a better storyline about us. We get a better storyline about society. We get a better storyline about samsara. We use psychological antidotes. We use Buddhist antidotes. And today, one of the biggest antidotes that's being used, by the way, I'm not being negative, we all need these antidotes, is loving kindness and compassion. That is the antidote that is being used today. Is loving kindness, not love, but loving kindness, boundless loving kindness, and boundless compassion. If in doubt, practice those. So where there is darkness, bring in light. Where there is hopelessness, find hope. Where there is a lack, find a strength. When you feel you have no talents, find a talent. And sometimes we can't do this, so we need to find a friend to do this. Sometimes we need a teacher to do this. Sometimes our partner helps us. Sometimes our best friends help us. But we have to listen. So we need better stories that work better than the story that doesn't work. So for instance, if one is very dull and very thoughtless and confused, you have to wake up the physiology. And I gave people a remedy, an antidote, which is a physiological antidote, is if you're sleepy and tired. I've tried this antidote on myself and others many times, and I know Namgyal Rinpoche used this method occasionally, which is throw a glass or a bottle of water over your head, and you'll see very quickly how your physiology changes. Or a sip of water even. So physiologically changing the energies, mentally changing energies, change your speech. So I'm being very general here. I'm not giving out specific antidotes saying, now this is what you do here. You have lots of that. You can look that up in text. You can go on the internet. There's lots of people teaching this. But we do need to recognize the importance of legend, myth, story, and a better story than we have going, which is to change the demon of doubt and change the demon that takes us away. So one of the stories that's important is the monastic story. Now, I'm not putting monasticism down. It's actually really, really important. But when we're too desirous of something, then one method is remove the object. Simple, take it away until you forget about it and you get onto some other thing. I also call that distraction yoga. Is if you're too involved in something, then change the theme. That's an antidote. Learn to change the theme or isolate yourself. Put yourself in a cabin, put yourself in a cave, take everything away and get used to having no objects of desire around you. That's one way to do it. The other way, of course, is work with those objects of desire until you see that there's no object of desire left. Try that. It works. Wear it out. So two different ways. So remembering that stories and antidotes don't liberate, but if we don't have them, we may not have the strength, we may not have the capacity, we may not have the willpower and capacity, the qualities to actually use transformation and self-liberation. So transformation, I'm going to go through the eight fears and show how each one can be transformed. Transformation means this, and why deity yoga is so important. The qualities of Buddhahood are already naturally inherent in our mind's nature. Practicing deity yoga, generation and completion stage yoga, fulfills the natural qualities that are already there by wearing the deity. That's really important. Learn, use that word. It's beautiful. I know I've given teachings on this, but it's been important for me. Wear the deity. If you're having a problem visualizing yourself as Tara or Chenrezig, then put on the clothes, put on the necklace, dress yourself up in that manner and try to feel yourself in that quality so you can approach the Buddha qualities. So liberation by wearing, wear the liberation. It is said that by practicing deity yoga, or practicing generation completion yoga enough, 6 sessions a day or 4 sessions a day, until you wake up with the mantra in the embodiment of the Adam. Until the Adam is so natural to your being that someone says to you one day, or a student or a practitioner or someone who knows says to you one day, oh, my goodness. You are Tara. You are embodying Tara. Your speech sounds like Tara. Your body is like Tara. So your mind feels like Tara. So when you can fully embody it and you can feel the naturalness of Tara and the qualities coming out, this is now practicing day and night. You're dreaming about Tara in some way. You're waking up with Tara. Your breaks are Tara. Your food is the model of Tara. Your retinue, your people around you is Tara. Then you've made transformation into the natural state. And number 3, self-liberation. I'm going to go through these with the 8 fears, so I want to give an introduction to this. Is self-liberation is trecho or mahamudra without support, is recognizing the unborn nature, not the transience, because transience is real, but transience isn't really ultimately real. There is no transience in the unborn nature. Things don't arise and things don't really pass away. Relatively, they do. But if one can look into the mind, recognize mind's nature, then any kind of afflictive state is not just vanquished, but it's seen clearly not to have any substantiality. Therefore, is liberated in its ground. It's liberated in its nature. And give you an example. We had a mirror here. Well, if I was to hold up a mirror, that's fine. Hold up a mirror. If you look into a mirror and you generate an afflictive state, lust, greed, desire, anger, rage, dullness, stupidity, don't want to see, don't want to look, jealousy, conceit. If you look in a mirror and you look at your face, you can see your face, But if you look, you'll never see the jealousy. You'll never see the dullness. A mirror has no dullness. It only has perfect, vivid, reflective clarity. The moment that you experience, this is the Akshobhya, Wisdom Buddha, Dharma Dhatu Akshobhya. The moment that you recognize the mirror-like nature of your mind, not as a concept, but as fact, as the way it naturally is, then there is no anger, there is no frustration. It's completely gone. It can't be seen to be found. Only habit, pattern, and memory brings it back. It has no self-existing nature. It is so quick and so fast. Happens within a millisecond. Anybody, I think, can do this, yes? I think. You just have to do it over and over and over again until you can do it for hours and hours and hours and recollect it very quickly. So these are the three ways in which Mara is defeated. So now let's turn to the eight great fears, which I've touched upon before, but now I want to use each of these three through each of the eight great fears. So elephants, a couple of weeks ago, I spent quite a bit of time with elephants and ignoring. But now I want to apply the model of the three ways of liberation. Although the first one doesn't liberate. Second one doesn't actually necessarily liberate either, but it's closer, much closer to it. So whenever we're ignoring, we don't want to see, whether we're stupid, dull, ignorant, whatever it is, it's simply we don't want to look. And so as an antidote, you have to feel the resistance to not investigating, not looking. That's all. And how do you cut through that? You have to feel the resistance and break through the resistance and look, study, learn. Dullness is very hard because dullness just saps the energies, and therefore you give any kind of excuse not to learn, not to study, not to learn, not to look. So you have to find an opposite. So physiologically, when you're dull, go have a shower. Go out in the rain. Isn't the rain lovely? Just go out in the rain. You'll feel different. You know, one of the greatest antidotes on Galliano if you feel dull? Let me give you an incredible secret on Galliano if you feel dull. You dive or jump in the water at the north wharf at Spanish Hills Wharf. Just jump in the water and you'll feel completely different. Matter of fact, it'll go like this. And in that moment, there will be release from being dull. Okay? Very fast. Or maybe a Swiss lake in the wintertime. Yeah? Or nice warm Christchurch water. That'll do it. Or an alpine lake. What other methods? Coffee, tea, go for a run. Those are physiological methods. And then we have speech methods, change your speech, and so on. All kinds of antidotes to bring yourself out. But one of them is to break out of the resistance to look, to listen, to learn, to study, to investigate. Very important. Very important. If you don't know, go look it up. And if you look it up, investigate whether what you looked up has any reasonable basis. Double check, triple check. This is what we learn, especially, I think, in high school now, but certainly in university. One of the things that we learn in university is don't rely on one reference, especially don't rely on secondary references, which is quite common in Wikipedia. Yeah, I look up some sites in Wikipedia and nothing but secondary references. Not one original reference is given. Yeah, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Go for the original references. Double check, triple check. You may say, oh, it takes so much time. Hey, get fast at it. And doesn't mean it's completely real. So transformation. I really don't have to speak on that very much, but staying in the mode of Tara's body, speech, and mind, especially concentrating on the form of Tara, especially concentrating as much as you can on the luminous nature of the mantra, the seed syllable, and staying with it will bring you out of dullness and stupidity. When you're in a really excellent state of clarity, your mind is clear. So one of the hallmarks of jhana, post-jhana, is a clear mind. If you can't look and you can't study when coming out of absorption or upachara, neighborhood samadhi, and your mind isn't clear and vivid, then it's probably not jhana and it's probably not upachara samadhi. It should be washed clean. Clean, clear. So, very easy. Transform out of dullness until you feel your nature's Tara. You will then shake off ignorance. Number three, self-liberation or treccho. That is, see the empty illumination of dullness. If you look at dullness, okay, here's a practice for you, which I've given up many times. A practice I used to do is whenever you feel dullness or sleepiness come on, unless you need to sleep. Now, if you need to rest and sleep, that's fine. But whenever you feel that come on, you wake it up and you look right into its heart. So what does dullness feel like? What does stupidity feel like? You have to feel the sensation of it. And when you can feel the sensation of it, which is like an injected drug into your being, like someone's actually taking a drug or you're taking a drug and you're squirting that with a syringe into your being and you're like this. You have to learn to go through the physical sensation and look at the mind. And when you can discover that the mind is absolutely clear in the dullness, it has no substantive nature. It's like looking in the mirror or into space, lit up space. You will discover the Dharma Dhatu. You'll discover that Sanskrit word, the sphere or the element of Dharma, which is absolutely free of confusion. This is the Dharma, this is the wisdom, the Buddha wisdom of Virochana. So you have to snap out of it. You have to learn to fiercely snap out of the dullness and look at the mind that isn't dull. Look at the mind that isn't ignorant. It's always there. So we get fooled by sensation. We get fooled by our body sensation, by irritability, by uncomfortableness, by dullness and sleepiness and tiredness and so on. So here you can hear Mara. Just go to sleep. You need to rest now. You're so tired. I am tired. Yes, you're so utterly tired. Or you're stupid. You're so stupid. It's not worth looking into this. Don't open that book. Don't check it out. Don't walk down the road to see if the tree has fallen, and so on and so forth. So Mara comes in with every kind of story, which is don't do it. Don't look. So when we can look and we can stay looking directly at the nature, not the sensation, not the phenomena, appearance emptiness, it liberates. And if it really liberates, it's like the weight, it's extraordinary. The weight just comes off. Okay, number two, lion, the fear of lions. Well, we've taken care of our lions. We've now put our lions, so there's a few lions left in the world, and we've tucked our lions away in a few zoos behind bars, and most of us, when we go looking at lions, aren't too scared. But there was a time when fierce animals reigned. 12, 15,000 years ago, we had to look out for saber-toothed tigers and lions and so on. And today, like in the Kootenays, when you go for a walk, you got to look for cougars. Yes, you got to be careful, cougar and bears. And so it's still around. But for us folks in urban areas or even on Galliano, where there's no snakes, there's no lions, there's nothing fierce except for cars and humans, no such thing. But lions represent pride. Lions represent the sharp teeth of pride and conceit. The need to be the best, the need to feel the best, the need to feel that one is the best and one is better than others. But also that you can have a pride, as Namjoon Rinpoche talked about, and the Buddha also talked about, is a pride is also pride in being the worst, pride in being lowly, pride in being not very good at things, and also the pride, the conceit, of being the same as everybody. We're all the same, and I've never been any different than anybody else. We're all together, and we're all having the same issues and everything else. So this pride, which usually manifests as being proud, the antidote is to replace it by seeing that all kinds of beings have talents, and often, if not always, a more superior talent to the talent that we feel that we're superior about, for sure. It's always somebody else out there. And other people have talents and qualities that we don't have that are far, far better in scope, or they have other ones that can be glowing and radiant, all kinds of beings. So this is the Buddha wisdom of Ratnasambhava. All beings are of equal nature. And as soon as we recognize that all beings have phenomenal talents, especially Buddha nature, but all kinds of amazing talents, the pride and conceit, low, medium, and high, can vanish. So we need a better story. And when we have pride, we also need to see its nature. And we need to see that we're being proud of something that could even be better, or we need to see that the humility of it is, yes, we're proud of our talents, but it only is a relative thing. Now, what is one of the best ways to come out of pride, and fast ways to come out of pride and conceit? Generosity, Ratnasambhava. The gift of Dharma, the gift of giving. Just give a gift. Give your talent. Give of your talent. Give and develop your weakness. And give a gift. Endless gifts. You may say, well, maybe that will build up my pride even more by being good. Well, you know, it's a beautiful thing to teach, or to speak, or to sing, or to give also shows you how much more you can learn, how much more talent you can bring to it, and how much more you can grow. So it's a beautiful antidote, is practice generosity in the midst of pride. Now, the second aspect, how to transform. If you transform into Tara or Chenrezi or Red Chenrezi or Mahakala, doesn't matter, whichever one it is. If you for a moment transform into that nature, you will have Buddha pride. and all of your relative pride of who you think you are and all the clingings to that, or the pride in your clan, the pride in your country, the pride in your province. Look at that, eh? We were so proud of British Columbia being on top of COVID, right? And then it wasn't. So pride in your family, pride in your country, pride in your species, pride, 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 and let yourself be in the mode of Tara. And then where is the pride? You have Buddha pride. You have love for every single being and compassion for every single being. And then the third aspect, let itself liberate. This is the Buddha wisdom of Ratnasambhava, the gift of natural face of liberation. Clouds try to hang on to a cloud, try to cling to a rainbow. And you'll say, well, you can cling to a pot of gold. No, you can't. So, number three, fire. Fire, the antidote, or sorry, fire represents anger. And I think some of us still, we don't necessarily have a terror of, not all of us have a terror of fire, but many of us do have a fear or anxiety around fire. If not, it's anxiety, a major concern around fire. But in the teaching of Dharma, fire represents anger, being burnt by rage, by burnt by anger, burnt by hatred. What is the major antidote? Loving kindness, loving kindness, loving kindness, compassion, compassion, compassion. These are great antidotes. Do things of peacefulness and tranquility, harmony, serenity. Bring serenity to a situation. Bring love and compassion to a situation to overwhelm the anger. You're not going to liberate it, but you're going to suffuse it. You're going to suppress it. It's going to settle down and so on. This is very good. Transformation. I think any of you know, if you've, even if any, for a fraction of a second, turned into Tara, turned into Chenrezig, glorious Tara or Chenrezig, for even a moment, you will not find even a shred of anger or hatred. It can't be found. It doesn't exist in the mode of Tara. It's just nothing but infinite compassion and love and radiance and empty nature. So that is the pride, the Buddha pride of the Adam. And then again for self, for the Idam, and then for Trecho, or for looking at its self-liberated nature, again, use the mirror, use the support of the mirror. Look and see if you can find that anger in the mirror by looking in the mirror. Does it actually exist? And as soon as you can recollect the mind's nature, if you can recollect the mind's nature, it won't be there because it never was and can't be there. It's not possible in mind's nature. In appearance, as solidity, yes. As a concept, yes, but not like that. Just like clouds vanishing into space or rainbows popping open, it's not possible to find it. And then the next one, poisonous snakes, jealousy, the killer. So the antidote to jealousy, again, love, great love, love and compassion. And understanding that one's talents, one has talents, if one's jealous of others' talents or jealous of what somebody else has, then see, really try to understand what incredible qualities one has, and we don't need to have those qualities. We don't need to have it that way. Yeah, jealousy just isn't needed when every single one of us has such amazing qualities that can be developed. And if one is jealous, then make changes to one's life. But clinging, jealousy and clinging, which is really anger, the great antidote is loving kindness and compassion. Again, these are very straightforward. If you practice the Adam, you practice the mantra yoga, if you practice the visualization of Tara and the mind of Tara, really enter into that, jealousy will completely, utterly melt. So when one is in a blissful mode, when one is fully blissful and taken into bliss, you can't have jealousy, you can't have anger, you can't have greed. It's not possible. So if you have bliss emptiness, even more so. So Tara is bliss emptiness. Tara is emptiness appearance or appearance emptiness. In the face of Tara's mind, the face of Tara's presence, you will see that because it's the natural condition, there will be the discovery of no jealousy. It's not possible to hold jealousy. It'll free itself up. And of course, the next one, which is self-liberation, is self-liberation through the view. If you can recollect the view, if you can recollect the view of Dharma, recollect the view of mind's nature, of what's called all-accomplishing wisdom, Amoghasiddhi, if you can feel the all-accomplishment of everybody's talents for Dharma, for liberation, then jealousy will go. Jealousy will just vanquish. It has no substantial nature. Thieves, number five, thieves. Thieves represent erroneous philosophy. Views that don't lead to liberation. Now, there are different kinds of views and concepts and philosophies. Some philosophies can be dangerous. Some views can be dangerous. Some ideas can be dangerous. So what's the antidote? Now, not just dangerous, they can also be stultifying. Not just dangerous, but they can keep us thieves. They can keep us in a kind of prison, a view and enclosure that doesn't let us move. I want to change a little bit of the idea there. By being a thief of other beings' views and not moving and studying and unfolding in view, we actually paralyze ourselves, which can be anything from dangerous to just stultifying, which is harm. What's the antidote? Learn. Learn other philosophies, learn other views, test out those views, learn, study, debate, travel. Listen to other beings. Spend time with beings that hold really different views with you. They may be erroneous, but it's actually good to listen. And then, of course, when it comes to philosophy, which comes from experience, especially in Buddhist philosophy, the Buddhist philosophy is developed through meditative experience. Then you need to find out where that meditative experience is, not just the philosophy. So this is a very important thing, is go through various philosophical traditions, study, learn, and practice that. So I'm going to recommend a book, which most of you, I think, have or have looked at, but take a look at a beautiful book, which has all of that, which is called Progressive Stages of Meditation. Beautiful book. It's exactly that. It has the major traditions of Buddhist philosophy and the meditative practices that go along with it. And you will see how to do that. You have to challenge your thinking. You have to challenge your view and your concepts and allow your mind and your thinking to open up to vaster, more inclusive, wider, greater lucidity and clarity around how one is seeing the world. Beautiful. That's an antidote. Transformation, again, become the deity. If you really become the deity and practice generation and completion stage, dissolving the seed syllable, resting the mind in vivid awareness, resting the mind in the qualities of Tara. If you keep practicing, you'll remove the erroneous philosophies into the unmistakable, non-conceptual nature of Mahamudra with qualities. So it's basically the same as the elephants not looking. So it's the Dharma Dhatu of mirror-like wisdom, not seeing dullness, not exploring. And I think you'll find if you reflect and you look and you study the history of great masters of Tibet and India, so many of the great masters were also great scholars, and they studied Buddhist philosophy and they really worked it so they could move their minds into greater scopes, not just through meditation, but through study. It's really important. Number six, imprisonment, which is greed. Associated with greed, being imprisoned, greed. Whenever we're greedy, we've imprisoned ourselves. Whenever we're holding on to something and we want it, we hold on to it, we can't move, we're paralyzed. We've fixated ourselves in a certain position. Yeah. We're in a prison, and it can be a beautiful prison, it can be a godlike prison, but it's a prison. What's the antidote? Give, 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 be generous, dana paramita. Stop and give. Stop the addiction. Let go of the addiction. Feel it being shed off your being. I have to stop. Don't analyze it. Just stop and let the sensation dissipate. I must have the Haagen-Dazs ice cream out of the freezer. Pause, 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 pause. Let the sensation dissipate until it's not there. Pause, pause, direct way, pause, 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 pause. Otherwise, one is in a prison. What is one addicted to within greed is sensation. It's addiction to a sensation that gives us pleasure, even if it's a bad sensation. Even if it's eating three bags of potato chips and you feel absolutely great, but you feel sick. Yeah? You eat all kinds of food and you feel sick. You read till 4 o'clock in the morning because it feels such a good novel, but now you feel sick. You love gardening. You're out in the garden. You're out in the garden for 5 or 6 hours. Sound like Stuart McLean, you know, except it's not Saturday, it's Sunday. Stuart McLean. You're out in the garden for 5 or 6 hours. You're enjoying yourself. It's a wonderful thing. The sun is out. And after 5 or 6 hours, you're not only sunburnt, but you're bleeding from your fingers. Do you follow? And yet you won't stop, and you're bleeding from your fingers, and you've hurt everybody else around you. That's addiction. That's greed. You're imprisoned by greed. How to transform? Oh, okay, so one of the antidotes, of course, is either be monastic, that is take the precepts by which you don't engage with those objects that make you happy or make you addictive, is get rid of them all. That's one way, that's an antidote. The other way is be so generous. If you love what you hoard, give it away. Give it away. If you love food, cook. Give, give, give. Transform. The moment you are in the body, speech, and mind of Tara, you will know that you need nothing in the world. This should be a direct experience of any of the Yidam practices. The moment you are engulfed in that, Yidam for real, either as pure appearance or as relative pure appearance, you will know this beautiful experience where there's nothing you ever need at all ever again in the universe. Mind's nature and the qualities of mind are the most beautiful, glorious gift in the whole universe for all sentient beings. That's Tara. That's called the ornaments of Mahamudra. Allow the uniform taste. So number, the C here, which is self-liberation. Allow the uniform taste of empty bliss. Empty bliss. Go for bliss. Have bliss. But see its empty nature and go into that. Go fully into that and find the bodhicitta. Find the unbounded great love in the bliss. I just want to refer you to something. You may want to look this up in the Gonchig. Just for your further awakening, if you look under section 8, number 26, Lord Jisim Sumgon said, all activities are accomplished even by a single deity. It's a profound. All activities are accomplished by even a single deity. It is said all activities, these are activities of Buddha nature, are accomplished even by a single deity. For any deity, the five, body, speech, mind, qualities, and activities, that is Buddha karma, are complete. And their activity displays itself to any tameable being when the time is ripe. When the time is ripe, the merit is ripe, any being that is tameable will be tamed. That is called the inexhaustible continuum of adornment. Isn't that beautiful? The inexhaustible continuum of adornment. That is the adornments of Tara. That is called Mahamudra. So Jisim Sumgon, another great master, very clear. Mahamudra does not just mean Dharmakaya. Mahamudra means the luminous glow of all the adornments and qualities of Buddha nature, whether it is one soul deity or 100 deities. Doesn't matter. Those are the qualities. Okay, number 7, water. Desire and attachment. Its meaning is desire and attachment. So that's the same as number 6. I don't need to speak about that. And number 8 is demons, doubts. And I've given a lot of some teaching on that today. And so again, counter doubt, counter Mara by better understanding of Dharma, better understanding of refuge, of Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, really study, really understand. And doubt is dullness and ignorance. And especially try to shake off self-doubt, depression, anxiety, all the frozen states. Doubt is the monster. Doubt is not understanding Dharma nature. Doubt, the mar of doubt, takes everything down. It strangles things. It just absolutely brings everything deeply down. Go look for the clinging and the deep attachment. It's its manifestation. So one has to get a better story. Hear better stories than one has, legends, stories, myths, it doesn't matter. Get a better story. Come out of it. And then also breathe. That helps. And if in the body, speech, and mind of Tara, all doubts will subside. There will be no demons. One should know that. And this is also the melting through bliss emptiness, the melting of Dumo. If one melts into the bliss emptiness and appearance emptiness, then there will not be a shred of doubt about one's own nature and one's capacity, a possible capacity. And also then self-liberation, finding the sphere where there never has been a doubt. That you have to look into mind's nature and see there never, ever has been a doubt from the very beginning. Doubt doesn't exist. Mara doesn't truly exist. Where can doubt be in the natural radiance of mind? So if you abide in the mirror-like awareness of Akshobhya, all doubts are liberated like rainbows and clouds. It's not possible. It's just not possible to have doubt. Can you have temporary doubt? Yes. Can you have concern? Yes. Ultimately have any doubts? There are no doubts. Doubts cannot be found in the universe. Just easy to look. Look into space like this. Look into the space of the room, which is space of your mind. Where's the doubt? It's not in the mind. It's just simply in fabricated sensations. It doesn't have any existence. Well, that was a quick tour. But this to me is important, is learning antidote, transformation, and self-liberation. And learn to have all those at your fingertips. And don't be afraid to use any one of those when you need to use them. And if you teach Dharma and you help beings, you also need to be familiar with all three and what's appropriate for those beings at that time. So let's take a 5-minute break, and then we're going to have a group meditation together.